Major Notley, Reel 15. I think you're saying that some battalions are better than others because of the quality of the COs concerned.
Yes, very much.
Do you think that's more the case in the territorials than it was in the regular battalions? Would the CO be more important in territorial formations and units?
Well, I think it's pretty important that you get a CO anywhere, but it's very important to territorial, I think. Mm. It's a very, quite a big job to be a good territorial CO. Mm. Yeah.
Do you know what the war role of the 126th Brigade was?
Yeah, we had a yes. We had a mob scheme, which I was in on, I suppose. Mobilisation is yes. Yeah. How much can I tell you about this in the middle? But we had got a mob scheme and had to be kept up to date. I think I was involved in that. You asked me where everybody went. I can't remember now. Mm.
Do you recollect whether the brigade was going to become part of an infantry division?
Yes, I suppose so. I'm sorry, I just cannot remember. And there was mobilisation areas they had to go to. And we had sort of requisitioning orders for buildings and all that sort of thing. Mm.
Would this be for accommodation purposes?
Yes.
What about the equipment? Were these battalions well furnished with the sort of equipment they needed for training and for their mobilisation roles?
Yeah, I think there was a problem there. I think it was mainly mobilisation equipment and storage. Mm. We had a big ordnance depot and had a lot of stuff down at Liverpool, Bursko. It's called Bursko. I know we had to do a raid on Bursko to see what security was like, and I had to lead the party, which was quite fun. And we got picked up by the police eventually.
Before or after you'd done the raid?
After we'd done the raid.
Mm. So was the raid a success?
Yes, but it wasn't meant to be a success. It was, because I went in uniform and demanded some rifles on the pretext that I was a brigade major and wanted them for an exercise. We got the rifles, and then we had to get away with it in an ambulance, I think. And the police were waiting for us and caught us, and they were hoping to.
How many rifles were you after?
I think I know what it was, a pair.
Was it you on your own, or you with a small party that did this?
A small party, I had a driver, a private soldier, I think, and the adjutant of the King's Own.
What sort of level of training were the TA battalions able to conduct?
Well, they could only rarely do company training and wander, but except the annual camp, and obviously they did battalion training. There's company at the platoon level, depending on the sighting of the companies. I can't know where all the companies were. Obviously, we had one in Lancaster, which was headquarters, and the company, and there was another one. The King's Own were in Lancashire mainly. The borders were obviously in North Lancashire, Royal Country. And the Royals were South Lancashire areas. I can't remember all the places now.
Did you notice if they had distinctive characteristics as bodies of soldiers, these three different battalions?
Yes, I think they did, yes. The borders were tough. The king's own, I think, were prices. And the loyals were perhaps slightly less loyal. But the more easy game.
What about the standard they managed to achieve on battalion training when they went on the annual camps? Were they at a reasonable standard?
Yes, I think so, really. Yes, I would say very reasonable.
What sort of things did they have to do on those annual camps? What sort of operations did they practice on exercise?
Well, they used to practice advanced contact, a certain amount of digging, an area where you could dig in. Scouting exercises, sending out patrols, withdrawals, exercises were written based on those.
Did you write the exercises as brigade major?
Yes, I used to do it.
Did you try to, it sounds like you tried to include all the phases of war when you were doing these?
Yes.
What did you draw on when you were drawing up these schemes? Was it your own experience or manuals or other sources of ideas? And
well, I think one had been trained for something, and one used the training that you knew. We had the manuals, obviously.
But you'd also had a great deal of personal experience, hadn't you, particularly in Italy?
Yes. Yes, Italy. We, of course, I wasn't too much digging in there. We were moved the whole time. There was no defensive exercise, for instance, in the Italian campaign, as far as I was concerned.
Was this training all for general European warfare, or did you train for other roles as well on the annual camp and at the weekends?
Yeah, I think we trained for general European warfare to be part of the brigade. But I had to go overseas. Air transportation didn't really come into it, but that'd be so different today, wouldn't it?
It would.
It would be air transportable. In those days, we had no sort of airlift, I can't remember anything involving the air, apart from anti-aircraft defence.
Did you have anti-aircraft defence in the brigade?
Yeah, I think we did, yes. Not, I mean, we didn't have army gunners involved, but we had defence, anti-aircraft obviously using your friends and
when you were doing your exercises, did you include in the schemes real or assumed artillery support, air support, armour?
Yes, such as I knew, yes. But they were always imagining we never got any armoured support. I mean, from the, you know what TA cavalry you would have got there, really.
Presumably there would be some yeomanry in your area.
No, I can't remember. Well, I know that there would have been. There's a Lancashire yeomanry, they're called. It's a chap, I don't get it. There was a yeomanry regiment. I cannot remember its name, but it was certainly very local.
And what about artillery? Did you ever have anything to do with them?
I think we had occasionally we had a brigade organised by division. We have sessions in the division, sort of troops going into the hall and clumps. We had that sort of thing. I mean, the general was pretty good used to get together and do that sort of thing.
This would be training for you, wouldn't it?
For me, yes. Yes.
Did that happen often, or was it a...
Yes, every year. I mean, I suppose they were there 2 years. So. Mm. I know we went to Blackpool for some dinner, and I think we were muddled up with the all the people who wear red coats and entertain the... there's a place down at Lionhead, I think they all go to, and there was one at Blackpool.
At Butlins.
I think they thought we were part of Butlins. We all dressed up in our regimentals. Mm. They thought it was great. I think that could be. I was going to tell you about TA. And the last brigadier I was there last year, called Hackett, who came from Channel Islands, he's dead now. And his son is here, and the full colonel, Tommy Hackett, was CBE. So I reckon the full colonel of CBE is about the best decoration anybody would expect. It's really a good thing, very happy. How he got it, I don't know. Have you seen him? He's literally here.
You were saying that you had difficulty with mobilisation stores. What sort of things were you short of for mobilisation?
Oh gosh, I think tentage, canvas. Bedding, all sorts of domestic things. Tables. Backboards.
What about weapons and war fighting equipment?
Everything was greased, of course. It was I think they were all right for rifles and guns, mortars. But everything was put away and very carefully greased. Awful thought, and we had to get it out. And
do you have any idea of how long it would have taken the brigade to mobilise if the word had gone out?
Oh. 5-7 months. We'd be lucky, maybe. Say about a month.
Did you ever practice mobilisation drills as part of the training?
Yes, but on a very small scale.
Well, this be specimen scale.
Yes. Mm. Very small scale. We're always conscious, I think, of the money side, you know. Then.
Was that intruding on you? Were you being pressed to cut costs, or
yes.
Who was doing that?
The Command Secretary, I suppose, really. Mm.
Was there any way in which you could actually reduce costs without reducing the quality or effectiveness of training?
Yes, I think there were. Yes, I think you could cut the cost by doing something on a very small scale, where you would have expected to deliver a much larger one. Mm. So what you did on the smallest scale.
But presumably that would have a harmful effect on training, wouldn't it, if you were doing that?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's true. Mm. What else can I tell you about TA? Now I have to go down to London and bid for trains to go to camp. Mm. It's quite fun because I went down on a sleeper, paid for by a government train. Luxury of sleeping, and I realised how nice it was to have a good sleep all night.
When you took up this appointment at 126th Brigade, did you know that it was going to be your last appointment, or did that come as a...
When my report came in, it was quite clear that I would get out, and I wouldn't get promoted. I could have gone on, and David Rutledge, my great friend, went on. He didn't get promoted, but... I couldn't see that I wanted to wasn't being hypnotized. You want to see my friends go there over my head. It would be a perfect idea. I mean, my reports in some America, despite what happened in Jamaica, the chances of promotion are very small. Well, Henry's head there was quite good for what's in it. I don't think I kept that report, but that was the gist of it. And the brigadier who didn't get recommended for promotion said, well, I didn't get recommended for promotion, I'm not recommending you. Nothing really mattered. TA brigadier wouldn't be. Regular brigadier. The last one recommended me, that was Hackett. But it was too late then anyway.
Was it that made your mind up to leave the army? That
oh, yes. Mm. I mean, I'm family growing up, and one would have gone back to battalion, that wouldn't have been much fun, because the commanding officer would have been junior to me, called Hagel, I'm Hagel. One didn't want to sort of go back and turn as a past over chap.
Did you have any thoughts about what you were going to do when you left the army? Had you made plans?
I thought Shell would be a good idea. I went for an interview in Manchester. I think I said I wanted to be a salesman in Shell. They asked me some questions, and one of them was very difficult. They thought I didn't quite understand what they were asking. Anyway, I didn't get any of that. But what did happen was I went to the Grand National in a bus. And the next door bus had a chap called Robbins, the brother of the cricketer, who was a personnel officer at Joseph Sankey at Colonel Wellington. And Robbie, who's dead now, knew me when I'd been in Italy because he commanded one of the battalions in our brigade. So he said, if you're stuck, let me know. So I went for an interview with TKN as a result of his efforts and got in there and worked at Joseph Sankey in Wellington. So I'm there. Which was not a place to live, Wellington, you know, but that's nicer here.
Did you find it difficult transferring from the service way of life to civil life after so long in the army?
I don't think so, really. I started on the lowest level. I mean, I had to sweep up the shop floor, and I had to do things in steel, which are unspeakable things with steel. And be there very early in the morning. And one got on, as I went on in Shankies and Rose a bit, one met people there with green berries, and they always said we really enjoyed our time when we were hostilities only and we were national servicemen. And I made good friends. Well, then the job came up as RO here, and Geoffrey Musson said, I must go. You know Geoffrey Musson? He was my CEO. He said, well, I want after he was then a major general. And John Notbush and Harris, so I came in here.
This being the Light Infantry?
I was what the Minister of Officer.
In Light Infantry Office at Shrewsbury?
Yeah, it was a depot here for training. My job really was, again, I was doing the TRI and all that sort of thing, which wasn't all that much fun. Look after the civilian staff and so on. Which up to a point was all right. I met a lot of friends, very handy, and found this walk with them.
Did you regret leaving Sankey's?
Not really, because the chap who I was opposite number only had one thing we shared, and that was what you get when you sit on cold stone piles. And I couldn't sit and talk piles all day with this chap. I think one's feet were cut away, really. I could have gone on in some case, and I think, it wasn't too difficult. I was doing purchases and supply department, and I was a sort of liaison officer with the steel side of all the what was going on.
Did you feel happier once you got back into connection with the army?
Yeah. Much happier. There were some good people in Chinese, but wasn't my cup of tea. Quite interesting that one time we were very short of parts for four, and I used to go with my little Morris. I had one of these wooden-bodied Morris miners, and I was allowed to carry tools, quite heavy tools. I had to go and get these to help me tooling in Sankey's, and that I really enjoyed. And we were really, there was so much business we couldn't cope with, and we had to put work out to different people. And it was mainly working for Ford's, producing mud guards and all that sort of thing.
This was in the early 1960s, presumably.
Yeah, that's right. I was there from 59 to 66, I think, when I came here in 60. 66, I think, yeah. About 5 or 6 years, I think.
When you came back into closer connection with the army as an RO, did you notice there'd been any changes since you'd retired?
Oh, yes, there's been quite a lot, yeah. Quite a lot. I mean, I wasn't involved in the training, but I think it was legal. They used to go to a camp from here, very far, by the ammunition. I got on the main place in Wales. And so many platoons are always in this camp.
Is that Warcop?
No, from here.
From here.
No, Warcop's out in the north. I don't know. It's not going on now, but there was a place. So the training is fine. And couldn't be very much really here. Not as drill later on, I seem to remember.
Well, you mentioned there had been quite a lot of change. You said there was more live firing. What else had changed since?
Ranges here weren't very good. There was live fire between here and Wellington. There's no way you could fire mortars or anything like that. Literally, Brennan and rifle training. Never had a range, I say, on the way between here and Wellington. I think we had some really good power pistol back there. That was really when I went left here, and the most ghastly time I had doing night shows.
Why did you leave your RO job? Was there a reason for that?
Yeah. I was a bit idle, and I think they really said, well, we've got somebody we'd rather have. So, I mean, I was eased out, not pushed out. And I could see the light coming. And I thought I'd probably done enough, and one was very much at people's beck and call. I went into Hambro's light shows, which was much fun. We had an office in the town where there were 30 of us all milling around Shrewsbury area and Shropshire. And we were given definite targets, and we had to get so many sales by a certain time. We had cold calling.
It sounds as though it's rather pressurised work.
It was pressurised, yes. We had a chap called Smith Keatley who used to supervise us. And we had an office with a telephone, and we each had a sort of cubby hole, and there were various instructions for making a call. First thing was to smile.
Smile while you were calling?
Yeah. We had one chap who was quite amusing. He was ex-army, and he was absolutely fed up with it. Wasn't doing very well. There was a little man standing behind him, who was the office manager, who had shoes with buckles on, you know, sort of type. And he rang his home up. There was nobody there, and he made a sale of himself. Jeff was delighted.
What had inspired you to join Hambros?
I think they wanted me. I don't know why they wanted me, but they heard I was this chap Smith Keach. He said, "Why don't you come down and see us in the office?" There was one other officer called Spong who'd been in the tanks, and he had done quite well here. He was previously worked for Calvin, which is a thing we have in a loo to spot the smell. He worked and made a lot of money there, and then he got into involved in Hambros too. He said it wasn't too bad if we had to do so much work. Commission was good. And you could build up, you see, over your commission. I was supposed to get 3,000 a year after so many years with a good girl, but no, the code calling was just jolly hard work. I made sales, when I had a physiotherapist when I hurt my ankle. I sold policies first to my physiotherapist. And a friend of mine in the army sent his son up here, and I did £1,000 deal with him. Well, that sort of thing is fine. But then people didn't always follow up. You know, you were supposed to make sure they paid in a year, but it didn't always work out that way. We weren't really allowed to do the family, but I did that. That didn't count. We got something to it. It's all very different now, of course. We had great books, we had everything to work out. Now you buy you spend a lot of money, you have a computer, and you go around with a computer with no sales, like we had.
Do you think that you have any regrets about having had a military career?
I'd like to have gone into the Navy, but my maths went up to it. I passed into Dartmouth, or would have gone to Dartmouth, and passed into the interview position, but my maths weren't good enough.
Do you think you'd have done better if you'd gone into the Navy than the Army? Would it have suited you better?
I would have loved it, because my father's in the Navy, and I love the sea, but trouble is, if you're off of the watch in an aircraft carrier, you've got to make a decision. It's worth millions of pounds, and you can't do that sort of thing unless you're a mass of 100%. And it's also specialised anyway now. My father was a seaman, which would have suited me, but all so many branches now. Again, the army, I mean, is terribly specialised.
It's becoming more compartmentalised,
yes. Yes. I don't think that I would have. If I had gone in today, one doesn't know where I would have been up to. I wasn't bright at school anyway. I got my school certificate, but it took all I could get.
What are the benefits of a military life?
Benefits of military life are wonderful countries that you go to, comradeship, sport. I mean, I've had shooting, which I've shot all my life, and a lot has been free, sport, sailing, skiing. Not that I skied in the army, but one could have done. I think those are the things that would appeal.